Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Tuesday, May 30th. I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2946 and invite up Representative Wisnant.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2946 was heard on the 28th and the 16th. The measure expands definition of state agency for purpose of Oregon transparency website. You do have a dash two amendment. It permits the semi-independent agency and other entities to request a link to information on their webpage about revenues, expenditures, and budgets be added to the transparency website. Clarifies inclusion of link could be public university statewide programs operated by public university rather than state programs operated by a public university. You have a minimal fiscal statement and no revenue statement on the dash two.
Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you and the honorable committee members for being on time. You're doing good. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnant. At least leadership guys, they sort of come in as a... For the record, I'm Gene Wisnant, State Representative, House District 53. Aaron, thank you and for scheduling me early. I have some more bills to testify on today. As I previously stated to this committee on this bill, it's a good bill, which adds semi-independent state agencies reporting on the Oregon website. That's at oregon.gov/transparency if you want to check it out. This is an item that's been identified as we need to improve our website, which is already has 100 rating. A OSHU lobbyist requested an amendment which moves the requirement to a different section of the bill, which will now only require those agencies to provide a link, not produce new data. And that's why the financial one was eliminated and down to a minimum. I support the amendment. Glad we've added a chief sponsor from this committee and urge the committee to pass the bill.
Excellent. Thank you. Questions?
You want to identify in case you
want to hurt.
All right. Representative McLean.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendment to House Bill 2946.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the dash two amendments into House Bill 2946. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes.
And Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2946 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 2946 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? As amended recommendation. Yes. Any discussion?
Madam Speaker, yes. I just want to commend Representative Wisnant for following this subject matter through the years and continuing to work on it, making it a better website for transparency for the state.
And being on time.
All right, any further discussions? Any objections? Motion passes. Carrier Representative Wisnant, thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
We'll close the work session on that. We'll go to you, the Umatilla bill. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3456.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3456 was originally heard on May 18th. It permits establishment of photovoltaic solar power generation facility on certain high-value farmland, declares emergency effective on passage. You have a dash one amendment. It adds requirement that solar facility be located in area that utilizes service and acreage of facility is not bigger than what utility anticipates being necessary to meet its renewable portfolio standard obligations. As conditions to when solar array may be established on high value farmland, you have a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact on the dash one.
Great, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 3456.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the dash one amendment to House Bill 3456. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes.
And Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3456 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 3456 as amended to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. Carrier will be Representative Greg Smith. Close that work session. All right. I am going to open a public hearing. Right, is that where we're at? Okay. I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 227A. Invite up Das.
Yes. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 227A updates rulemaking process to reflect current practices in use of digital technology, authorizes rulemaking by Secretary of State as to forms of filings, requires electronic transmission of all rule adoptions, changes, or appeals from a Secretary of State to Legislative Council within 10 days of filing, requires agency to report 5-year rule reviews to the Secretary of State, takes effect 91st day after signing die. You do have an A4 amendment. It does require the Secretary of State to notify agency that the rule has been submitted to Legislative Council. You have a no fiscal impact and a no revenue impact on the A4 amendment. It does come to you from your Senate with 28 aye votes.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric Jorgensen from the Secretary of State's office. I want to thank you for your time as well as the work of Lindsay Baker from DAS collaborating with us to bring this together and to make this great bill that was passed, as was mentioned, overwhelmingly in the Senate.
Good afternoon, Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Beth Herkert, and I am the Director of the Secretary of State's Archives Division. I'm here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 227. The Archives Division is responsible for receiving, for filing, and publishing administrative rules from state agencies and boards and commissions. Any changes to the administrative rules are published monthly and annually. The process used to do this has not really changed in over 20 years, resulting in delays in publication of up to 6 weeks. The number of rulemaking actions continue to increase, and the ability to search online is cumbersome at best. Because of this, we've spent the last biennium developing the Oregon Administrative Rules Database, which is scheduled to go live in July. This database streamlines the rulemaking process by allowing agencies to write and file their rules into a secure database, submit them to our agency where they'll be published as soon as they are verified as being accurate and complete. This means all rulemaking actions will be available to the public as soon as they are published, rather than having a 2 to 6 week delay. In addition, the rules database provides the public with a robust search engine capable of searching across all rule texts and actions. With these changes, the current statutes governing these rules also need to be updated. ORS Chapter 183, as it pertains to administrative rules, is generally written for a manual rules filing process and requires the Secretary of State to produce an annual compilation of printed compilation of OARs. Where we once printed over 3,000 sets of the compilation, we now print 63. The Oregon Administrative Rules Database also eliminates the need for paper filings and requests. Thus, the statute should be modified to fit with an all-electronic system. We also worked with Legislative Council to allow for the filing of rule amendments and adoption to be filed electronically instead of agencies having to hand-deliver paper copies of these rules to Legislative Council. In conjunction with this change, we also want to thank Lindsay Baker at DAS for her work on the -A4 amendment, which requires us to notify the agency filing a rule in writing that the rule has been sent to Legislative Council. This will also be done through an automated process, so when a rule is sent to Legislative Council, the system will notify the rules coordinator that the rule has been sent to Legislative Council. Updating the existing statutes found in ORS 183.310 and 183.325 through 183.715 modernizes the language so that it is technology independent and reflects the more modern process that the new Oregon Administrative Rules Database will provide to filing and publishing Oregon's administrative rules. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Are there questions? All right, thank you very much. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 227A, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 227A.
Madam Chair, I move the -A4 amendment to Senate Bill 227A.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the -A4 amendment into Senate Bill 227A. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? None. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 227A to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved Senate Bill 227A to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. Anyone would like to be a carrier? Representative Smith Warner.
Hold
that I will close the work session. And colleagues, I'm going to open a work set or a public hearing on the first three bills on the agenda, since Lindsay Baker has to speak on all of them. We'll just open them all up. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 86, on Senate Bill 88A, and on Senate Bill 91A. Come on down, Lindsay.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 86 expands authority of Oregon Department of Administrative Services to require fingerprints of its employees or applicants to include applicants and employees of executive branch entities receiving human resource services from the department. Senate Bill 88 changes the name of fee to use electronic government portal from convenience fee to portal fee and clarifies that quorum of electronic government portal advisory board is majority of voting members. And Senate Bill 91 removes requirement that travel awards earned by state personnel while engaged in state business be managed by state agencies.
Feel free to go in whatever order you would like.
So for the record, good afternoon, Chair Williamson, members of the committee. For the record, Lindsay Baker with the Department of Administrative Services. I will start with Senate Bill 86A. It's the first on the agenda, and it's sort of a pretty easy housekeeping one. So right now, under current Oregon law, agencies that wish to perform criminal background checks on their potential employees must do so only if they have statutory authority to actually perform the check. And this is pretty typical, and it really just involves sort of syncing up with the LED system that lives within OSP to ensure that the background check is accurate. However, for agencies that do not have statutory authority, they cannot run background checks. So right now, DAS actually enters into HR service contracts, and this typically is for smaller agencies, boards, and commissions who really don't have their own internal human resources shop. And so we enter into HR service contracts with those agencies. We do their recruitment. We do their, you know, help them out with their interview process, do their onboarding and hiring. However, because these potential employees are not potential employees of DAS as an agency, but instead of this other agency, we as DAS cannot run a background check on those employees. So this bill changes that and allows DAS to run criminal background checks on potential employees for agencies with whom DAS has an HR service contract. It's really, truly a fairly easy housekeeping measure. So if there are any questions, I am happy to answer them.
So Lindsay, DAS can run a background check on a person who may be offered a job with an agency that does have statutory authority for a background check?
Chair Williamson, no, maybe I was not being very articulate. So I'll use an example. So DAS has our own statutory authority to run background checks on our own potential employees. The Board of Accountancy, and I'm not sure if they have it or not, but let's use Board of Accountancy as an example. They're a small agency. They do not have their own statutory authority to run background checks. However, they have an HR service contract with DAS to do all of their HR functions. Because DAS only has authority to run on our own potential employees, we cannot run a check on the Board of Accountancy's potential employees. So this bill would allow us to run checks on potential employees of agencies with whom we have an executed HR service contract.
In which there's no statutory authority right now to run a background check.
Chair Williamson, that is correct, yes.
Okay. Yes, Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lindsay, for being here. I just wanted to ask very briefly about the timing of the background checks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that this body in 2015 did some work on taking the check here if you've had a criminal conviction off of the initial application process. So I guess I'm just doing a little check, and I'm hoping that this is for the ability to do this once an offer has been extended, et cetera, as part of, you know, because they need a clearance or whatever, rather than just is this an automatic thing that everyone does for their employees?
Representative Smith-Warner, so if I'm understanding your question correctly, it's about the timing in the recruitment process, not the length that it takes to process the check itself.
Yes.
So to that question, yeah. So typically, I think there are some exceptions where we would sort of make it such that you could not have employment if you had a criminal conviction, and that would likely be in the public safety space. However, by and large, we would never run a criminal background check until an offer of employment has been extended. And we really do try to sort of bifurcate that process, so we make sure that the HR manager who's in charge of the recruitment and in charge of the hiring does not perform the the more paperwork criminal background check function of the candidate in that selection process. So we would go through the process of recruitment, of selection, of of interviewing, of selection, and then once that candidate is selected, then if it if the position requires the background check, we would do that check.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. So to confirm, not every position is going to, this is not an automatic thing that you do before you offer any job.
Representative Smith Warner, that's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Vice Chair Rayfield.
So how many agencies do you have these contracts with that do not have the authority, statutory authority, to run background checks? Would we be giving access to run background checks on?
Representative Rayfield, I could venture a guess. I would estimate somewhere between maybe 15 and 30 of the smaller agencies, boards, and commissions that do not have their independent statutory authority that we also have HR contracts with. But I could find out and get a definitive number because I know we have it. I just don't have that.
And the list would be fantastic. I'm going to follow up. Mm-hmm. The other question I have, for the entities that you do have contracts with, HR contracts with, and they do have statutory authority to do background checks, can you do background checks now for those entities?
Chair Williams and Representative Rayfield, the way that I understand it is no. The short answer is no, because we do not, that would not be our DAS's potential employee. We would not have authority to run that. But I can find out absolutely for sure and get back to you.
Mm-hmm. Questions? All right. Thank you very much. We can go on to the next one. Whichever.
Hey, sure. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Larry Warren. I'm the Enterprise Shared Services Director for the State Office of the CIO. And Measure 88 would do just a cleanup, kind of as Lindsay was describing our last bill, although there was a lot of questions, so maybe I didn't want to use that as my example. The two things is, for the electronic portal board, convenience fee was confusing language because the credit card industry uses that language, and so we're asking to change the language to portal provider fee so there's not confusion on what we're talking about, where we're talking about the portal provider fee that's charged by state agencies in using the e-government program versus a convenience fee that has to do with credit card fees. And the second piece it does is it changes the quorum from members, because we have quite a few non-voting members, to just voting members. So we have a hard time reaching a quorum a lot of times to take action, and it often has to do with our non-voting members that aren't able to make it. And so we're changing we were requesting to change the quorum to be just for voting members.
Questions? All right, thank you.
For the record, Lindsay Baker with the Department of Administrative Services. So Senate Bill 91 is a measure that comes to you from DAS, and it really just attempts to update sort of our reporting and tracking requirements of travel awards, and attempts to align that reporting and tracking with federal policy and with the private sector practice. I'm joined today by Rob Hamilton, who's our Statewide Accounting and Reporting Division Manager, who can talk in a little bit more detail and offer some technical expertise on this measure.
Members of the committee, Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Rob Hamilton. I'm the manager of the Statewide Accounting Reporting Services Unit, which is within the Chief Financial Office at DAS, like Lindsay mentioned. I'd like to start by noting that for calendar years 2010 through 2016, so a period of 7 years, statewide there has been $20,454 of savings that the state has achieved through the redemption of travel awards. That equates to just under $3,000 a year. The high during that period was $5,300 in 2010. The low was in 2013, where there were no savings. For 2016, there were $4,500 of savings. We have found that this is largely due to the variety of travel awards that are available to a traveler. A traveler in this context includes state officials, so a board or commission member, a volunteer, or a state employee. The most common form of travel awards that a state official may earn would be through the use of per diem and meals and incidental reimbursements, things of that nature, which are very small in terms of the actual costs. So by consequence, if they're using a credit card, the reward is quite small. However, there's still a responsibility for the state agency to track that use, and tracking would include what's earned, what's expired, what has been lost, and then what has been redeemed. And they report that redemption to my unit every April 1st. We have found that because the travel award variety is so great with the use of credit card reward programs and things of that nature, and the limited amount of rewards that are actually earned on the per diem, it has added an administrative burden to those state agencies to continually track that information on a state official basis. And so we're asking to no longer have to report and get out of the tracking of that just because of the costs associated with doing that tracking. And we have found on top of that with the travel awards, they're often they're tied to an individual. And so if the credit card is in the name of the individual, the rewards program is in the name of the individual, it's not in the name of the state. And so with that personal tie to those travel awards, it adds to the complexity of trying to redeem those to reduce state travel. I would love to take any questions that you may have on the topic.
Thank you very much. I will close the public hearings on Senate Bill 86, Senate Bill 88A, and Senate Bill 91A. And colleagues, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 88A, which is the only one we have paperwork and we can move today. So,
which one?
88A.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 88A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved Senate Bill 88A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Not, motion passes. Carrier. Representative Kenemer, thank you. Close the work session. All right. And so I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 384A.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 384A makes clear that State Fair Council owns fairground properties and facilities that are not real property, while Oregon Department of Administrative Services owns real property unless they otherwise agree in writing, authorizes council to capitalize expenditures that provide long-term benefits to real property to determine net operating profit or loss.
Welcome, Vicki Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Vicki Berger, and one of the few things that I did retain when I left the legislature was my interest in the Oregon State Fair. I serve on the Oregon State Fair Council with the good Mr. John Chandler, and that is what brings me here today. As I look around this committee, which I sat on for many years, it's a comfortable, familiar place, I realize that there's a lot of members here who don't have the history with the Oregon State Fair, so if you'll indulge me, I will give you a bit of history about the fair. When I came into the legislature in 2003, surprise, surprise, we were in financial free fall and trying to cut everything out of the budget we possibly could, and the fair was on the chopping block. We were going to eliminate the state fair altogether. It was saved by the device of taking it off general fund and putting it on lottery funds under the Parks Department over the strong objection of the Parks Department. They didn't want it. They didn't see it as central to their mission, and it wasn't the kind of thing that parks normally would deal with. But we gave it to them anyway in order to save it, and they struggled with it programmatically for about 10 years. They then came to me my last session, which was 2013, and said there's a better way to run this, and it's the model that we have used in a number of instances that just don't fit with state government. And so the Oregon State Fair Council was formed. We are a council with the responsibility and the statutory sort of directive to put the state fair in the black over time because it was losing money under parks. It was losing money before. We are given this charge, and we are allowed then as a council to make the fair work under a more less programmatic and more contracting system, which really works when you expand all weekend and have a huge event and then you go back and you don't have anything for the rest of the week. You can't afford to burden yourself with all the personnel costs of that kind of a government operation. So the Fair Council was formed, and under the statutory authority, DAS retains the fairgrounds and all of the facilities. We operate the fair and the exhibition center, okay? Our bill today is simply an oversight when we set that up. We said DAS owns everything. Well, that means that if we purchase a new stapler, DAS owns it. If we purchase a new computer system, DAS owns it. We will never make money if we cannot capitalize the assets that we buy. So the State Fire Council would like the authority statutorily to be able to capitalize the assets that we need to start purchasing to keep this operation going. I'm coming to you with good news. We have had really good growth. We are really headed in a wonderful direction. We're the fair. If you don't go, please, we'd love to have you come and see what's going on out there. The exhibition, the exposition center is doing really well. We're headed in a really good direction. We are also going into our first major audit, starts today. And I can tell you our auditors will notice that we cannot capitalize our assets statutorily. So you being the state of Oregon, still own the fairgrounds, you own our buildings. But if we purchase a new computer system, we need to be able to put it on our books. And there's a lot of other things that we will be purchasing with our own resources that have to be able to capitalize. So that's what this bill is about. And I thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, John Chandler here on behalf of the Oregon State Fair Council. Nothing really to add to what Ms. Berger had to say other than to point out two things. One, the bill in the Senate version, we had run into some difficulties, language issues with the military department and with DAS. Lindsay Baker from DAS did a great job helping work that through to come up with the language that's in the Ingalls version. There was no opposition. It was simply making sure things were clear. When Senate Bill 7 was passed, as Ms. Berger alluded to, in the 2013 session, there were, as often happens, some things we didn't think about, one of which was the relationship between the state fair, the state of Oregon, and the military department that has been clarified in these amendments. And also, like was said, who owns what piece of the fair? And it's not just the ability to purchase it without asking DAS if we can buy another ream of paper for the photocopier, but also, as was said, we are making money with this now. And this experiment that we're on, I think we are the first state fair, if not one of the first state fairs, that's been taken from entirely public to semi-public private ownership. And so around the fair and exposition center world, this is being looked at as a see if it works for us. And so far, we're on a very positive trajectory. But being able to capitalize when we make money on the event center, we put money back into repairs of state maintenance on state buildings, we don't get to own the building, but we do get to capitalize that as part of our profit and loss to prove to the legislature that we're actually going in that positive direction. It's a good bill. Thank you for your support of it, we hope, and be glad to take any questions.
Yes, Representative Rayfield.
Just a couple quick questions. I mean, I think the first thing that concerns me is that the truth of the statement that you guys are doing very well when I know that Mr. Chandler is on your board. I just naturally become skeptical. But with that said, I'll just give you the benefit of the doubt. The one question I had is on currently right now it says that you can't enter into any contract that was result on a lien on the property and then now shifts it to where you if there is approval from DAS then you can is that just as simple as it sounds?
It is. We work with, by the way, very well with DAS. We have a good relationship. They're our landlord. And when this first came up, we went to DAS first, talked to them about this language, and have worked very closely with them, and because we're partners here with you. We aren't trying to go off and do anything outside of what our mission is, which is try and keep the fair going and not be a burden to your general fund.
Thank you for that.
And then one just quick follow-up. Mm-hmm. And then the one question I have is if you're purchasing the property, making additions to the land and doing things like that, which then become property of the council, is there or does the state have like a reversionary interest in what you guys are doing if it were to become defunct?
We have not asked our executive director yet to come up.
Didn't see anything in here.
But he can introduce himself in his quiet voice. There's a reason that I'm the loud voice. He's the quiet voice here.
Mike Polishak, I'm the director, and it sounds worse than it is. any improvements to the real property upon completion become the property of DAS. any personal property, tractors, tables and chairs, you know, accessories is what this speaks to as ours. What the bill hopes to do is any investment that the council makes in either the real property or personal property is credited to us for the purpose of determining profit or loss. That answer your question?
It does. And just one quick follow-up. But if you were to, you know, become defunct or things like that, and you would have assets that would be the property of the council, does that, you know, where do those assets go in that event?
Madam Chair, Reverend Rayfield, they would go back. They're the state's property. There's two parts of this bill. One is to separate the real from the personal property, as was mentioned. The other is the accounting machinery so that we can actually demonstrate that we are, in fact, running a profit if we are at the end of a year. But anything we purchase still is we are trustees for the Oregon State Fair and Expo Center. The ownership of those assets, while it may rest in the council, while the council is operative, would refer back to the state. That was in the original legislation.
And that's what I was at. Thank you very much.
Great. Any additional questions? All right. Thank you all very much. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 384A. I will open a work session on Senate Bill 384A.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 384A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved Senate Bill 384A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. Representative Rayfield, be the carrier.
What about HAC?
Mm-mm, nope.
Still studying this one.
I will close the work session on Senate Bill 384A. All right. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 317A.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 317A adds Indian Country to list of places where governing bodies of cities, counties, and states may hold meetings.
Michael Mason, come on down.
Thank you, Chair Williamson and members of the House Rules Committee. My name is Michael Mason. I represent the Coquille Indian Tribe. I also represent the Confederate Tribes of Siletz and the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs. And to my knowledge, all of the tribes support this bill. This would fix a problem that was first identified in late 2014. Actually, a meeting of the Board of Forestry was set for the Mill Casino Resort. The attorney for the Board of Forestry at DOJ informed Chair Cal Mukamoto that there seemed to be a problem with that meeting being held there. Thus, they moved the meeting to the Red Lion in Coos Bay. And then, after some discussion, I was not as effective as I had hoped to be in this. Department of Justice decided that the word jurisdiction in the public meetings law meant that state agencies and local government bodies could not meet to deliberate toward or take action. They could meet, they could do trainings, they could do retreats, but they could not meet at the nine tribal facilities. So by the time we got done trying to work on an administrative solution to this, it was too late for the 2016 session. So we're now here with Senate Bill 317. And I'm sitting where the Attorney General addressed the Commission on Indian Services. And I'm not trying to speak for her, but I heard her say she supports Senate Bill 317. I think you could confirm that with the record from the commission and her office. But certainly all the tribes supported it, passed the Senate unanimously, as you're aware. It's an odd situation to end up with there being nine places where agencies and county commissions cannot meet, all of them being tribal. And I think if you talk to folks, particularly on the Fish and Wildlife Commission, they did meet and they did take actions at Caneta in particular. And it would be helpful to clear up that was okay. For a number of reasons, but I am happy to answer any questions about 317.
Any questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 317A. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 317A.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 317A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved Senate Bill 317A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? For the record, Smith Warner is excused. So, is, yeah, Hack's been excused for all of them. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, with that, I will. Motion passes. I will carry it. Going in order, to be fair. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 317A. We'll stand at ease for 1 second. I'm going to roll over or carry over House Bill 3454 to June 1st. And with that, do we have any more business, Aaron?
We are done, Madam Chair.
All right, with that, we are adjourned. Thank you. Thank you. Business, Aaron?
We are done, Madam Chair.
All right, with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.